we'd planned.
You ready?
Jesse murmured. Nope. Then we heard the horn. What was the real term for it again? Oliphant? I had expected something sort of fluty, but it sounded more like a hollow foghorn with a sense of dread. I thought it was a little loud, but all around me, I saw people drop to the ground, covering their ears. Jesse and Shadow seemed unaffected, but when I turned to look, even Beatrice had fallen to one knee. Dashiell was bent over her, looking worried. Will's hands were clamped over his ears. Kirsten's lips were moving in some sort of protection spell. Then the sound finally faded, and I faced forward again. Before anyone could speak, I heard a galloping sound, like hooves striking concrete. Hooves and claws. It sounded like a whole horde of them, ominous as fuck, and my stomach turned into a rock. What if I was wrong about all this? What if we were all just lined up here waiting to die? Then they came around the bend and into the light of the farthest lanterns. The hunt rode toward us as a single organism. There was no jostling for position, no veering off course, no confusion. They moved like an enormous rolling black wave, terrible and inevitable. Beside me, Jesse said something low and scared in Spanish. The people of the Los Angeles Old World, God bless them, held steady, waiting for a signal from me. My eyes went to the horses first, because, well, the horses were horses the way that Shadow was a dog. They were all ink black, their hides covered in pebbled armor, galloping and snorting like something out of a nightmare. I didn't know much about horse breeds, but they looked like Clydesdales or something similar. Each one probably weighed 2,500 pounds, and despite the dim light and the distance, I could see that their hooves sent up little sparks on the concrete, like metal axe heads. There were too many for me to count quickly, but probably close to 20. Oh, shit, squeaked Kirsten's voice behind me.
What are they?
I heard Hane ask her. Hellhest. It didn't sound like English, but it was as good a name as any for the equine equivalent of bar guests. I couldn't make out much about their riders because all the lights were sitting on the ground, but running at the Hellhest's feet, I saw a pack of terrifyingly massive black dogs. Barghests. Five of them. I recognized an Irish wolfhound mix and a couple of Great Danes, all with the trademark inky darkness of the spell. Each and every one of them was bigger than Shadow. And it was only in that moment that I realized what had happened to the people living on the edge of Sunken City. Permanently changing dogs into Barghests and horses into Hellhest would require a human sacrifice. For each one. Which meant that something like 25 humans had been killed, and judging from the bedrooms I'd seen, some of them had been children. I felt righteous anger build up in my ribcage. The humans of Los Angeles weren't technically under my protection, but that didn't mean those assholes could show up and kill entire families in my fucking town. I stepped forward, and when the wild hunt was 100 yards away, I held up my hands in a stop gesture. Truthfully, I wasn't sure they were even capable of stopping. The law of inertia didn't seem to apply here, but the leader pulled on his reins and the entire group pulled up short behind him. I walked forward. Only now that they were close could I make out anything about the riders. Dressed in black robes and metal masks, they were both terrifying and glorious, like something out of Guillermo del Toro's personal happy place. The leader moved his snorting, stamping Hellhest closer, but stopped a good 20 yards away from me. He had a massive sword slung onto the saddle. They all had swords, but only his seemed to emit its own gentle glow.
Dashiell,
I said over my shoulder.
You're up!
The vampire came up behind me and slowly passed me, stopping 10 yards from the silent rider. Then I closed my eyes and pushed my radius out until it encompassed the entire wild hunt. It felt astounding. I was used to Shadow's power, and this felt similar, but magnified by the sheer number and size of the different animals. Something still felt wrong, and it took me a moment to realize that I hadn't actually broken the spell. I'd only subdued it, like holding your foot down on a cockroach. The magic was still there, so powerful that it staggered me. Jesse appeared beside me, putting out a hand to subtly support my elbow. Dashiell was talking, trying to negotiate, but I couldn't focus over the intensity of the wild hunt magic.
Scarlet?
Jesse murmured, glancing down at me.
What's going on?
I don't know, I whispered. I looked at the riders, who had instantly transformed back into humans. They were all blinking and looking around with obvious disappointment. Their black robes and masks had disappeared, revealing regular street clothes. The majority of them were women, which shouldn't have surprised me. Statistically, nearly all witches are female. I just never expected women to do the really evil stuff. The Wild Hunt's leader was, of course, Aldric, now dressed in jeans and a red button-down shirt. There was black cloth showing under the shirt, and I figured he was also wearing Kevlar. Like the others, he blinked a couple of times, looking around, and then a smile spread across his face.
Intoxicating,
he said, lifting one hand from the reins and studying both sides of it.
Just as I hoped.
I forced myself to tune him out. I had to figure out why the Wild Hunt spell hadn't broken. I closed my eyes again so I could pick out the different sensations that were swirling in my radius. It was hard to separate and identify them, like picking out different ingredients in a smoothie. Only the magic was trying to blend together into a fucking force of nature rather than a delicious beverage. My eyes popped open again. The witches didn't feel like witches. That was the answer. Whatever magic drove the Wild Hunt was the same substance that all witches used, but Kirsten and her kind channeled magic, pulling it out of the air and letting it run through them. These Luparii witches had done something different. They'd summoned the Wild Hunt magic into themselves and kept it there, something no one was supposed to be able to do. So they felt less like witches and more like magic incarnate, densely concentrated and borderline unstable. This was stronger than witch magic. It was elemental. And it was exhausting. I could do it. I could keep them human. But for the first time in my life, nullifying magic was slowly tiring me. Then I realized that it wasn't just the riders, their Hellhest, and the Barghests, although that was plenty. It was also the sword, Durendal, hanging at Aldric's side. And something else. There was something on Aldric's person that felt practically radioactive. Jesse squeezed my hand. The conversation had been getting tense. I tuned back in.
You need to leave my town now,
Dashiell said to Aldric. I had to admire the vampire. He was currently in my radius, but he spoke with such bracing authority and command that even I kind of wanted to get a plane ticket out of there. Aldric just smiled. His street clothes should have looked comically weird against the black, unearthly Hellhest, but the old man looked completely at ease on its back, like he'd been riding horses since birth. I recognized the witch flanking him on his left. It was Petra Corbett, her spine perfectly straight as she smirked down at me from her horse. I managed not to spit at her, but it was a close thing.
Why would I do that?
Aldric said coolly.
Because of the Colnaw?
He gestured at me. Jesse's hands curled into fists, and I had the impression that I'd been insulted.
If you want me to be human, you have to be as well, Aldric continued. Yenelir or no, my hunt can decimate your pathetic numbers, and if she dies, the hunt returns. No matter what you do, the spell will last until sunrise.
Dashiell said something back, But I'd closed my eyes again, trying to figure out the source of that extra pulse of magic in my radius. So I never saw Aldrich's mount sidle a little to his left, making room for a rider in the back of the pack, holding a handgun. I did hear Jesse scream, "Scarlet, down!" But not before the rider pulled the trigger. Chapter 45. Jesse had argued with Dashiell for a long time about the gun thing. The Lupari had showed before that they were willing to use modern weapons, so Jesse's feeling was that they should be prepared to raise guns the moment Scarlet turned them human. But Dashiell was old school enough to think firearms didn't have a place in the old world, and he didn't want to be the first one to break that unspoken rule. "Why does it matter?" Jesse had countered back at the mansion. "They came to your town and are planning to kill your people. Who cares about archaic rules?" "It matters," Dashiell had insisted. "Their whole objective is to come here and prove that our previous resistance was a fluke, and they can exterminate us whenever they want. People are watching how we handle them. If we resist with honor, or what passes for honor in the old world, it matters to people. And if they beat us dishonorably, that matters as well." Jesse kind of thought it was bullshit, but they didn't have enough time to keep arguing about it. They'd agreed that Jesse would bring guns, but he wouldn't take the first shot. Jesse was really regretting that compromise when one of the Lupari witches shot Scarlet in the chest. He was flanking her when she fell, and he managed to half-catch, half-lower her to the ground so she didn't hit her head. Shadow immediately began nosing at Scarlet, checking that there wasn't any blood, and the bulletproof jacket had done its job. Jesse said a silent prayer of thanks that the werewolves and Shadow had taken out the Lupari's snipers at Bronson Caves. If they had been with the Wild Hunt, they could have killed Scarlet with a headshot. Jesse really wanted to yell at Dashiell for his boneheaded resist-with-honor plan, but after making sure Scarlet was alive, the Cardinal Vampire had run straight into the fray. The gunshot was a signal to the rest of the L.A. community, too. Dashiell had never really thought talking to the Lupari would get them anywhere, but he'd suggested using it as a cover, so that their own people could circle around to the back of the Wild Hunt's group undetected. Now the Lupari group was surrounded. Several of them tried to run out of Scarlet's radius, likely hoping to become the furious host once more, or at least circle around the L.A. people, but the sight of the snarling werewolves patrolling the edges kept them where they were. These people were afraid of werewolves. Most of L.A.'s vampires and witches surged forward to clash with the Lupari, though a few of the physically weaker witches backed away under the bridge. Jesse couldn't see the whole battle, but Dashiell was currently just a little ways in front of him, dodging Aldrich's sword as he tried to pull the Lupari leader off his mount without being struck by the Hellhest's terrible hooves. The beast, it was really the only term for it, seemed sort of confused, like it suddenly couldn't remember what it was doing, but Aldrich was spurring it on. "Scar," Jesse said, looking back down at her. "I know that hurt, but are you okay?" She didn't answer him. Her eyes were open but unfocused, like she was struggling to concentrate on something. He figured it had to do with her radius and the Lupari, and stopped trying to get her to talk. She probably couldn't hear him anyway. There were a number of people shooting guns on both sides. Several of Kirsten's people were down, but the Wild Hunt witches must have been wearing Kevlar too, which just seemed unfair. Jesse kept his head down and made sure his body was between Scarlet and the gunfire. Then Shadow suddenly sprinted away from his side. She had been glued to Scarlet's prone form, but when Jesse looked up, he realized that three of the bar guests had broken off from the fight and were coming toward them in a triangle formation. All around him, the Los Angeles Old World was fighting the Wild Hunt, but Aldrich had likely told these animals to focus on Scarlet. If she died, L.A. would fall. Jesse helped Scarlet lay down on the ground and stood up, pulling out his Glock. He knew from experience with Shadow that gunshots couldn't really hurt the three snarling Bargists, but they would heal more slowly in Scarlet's radius, and he could at least slow them down and scream for help. As a cop, Jesse had broken up two different dogfights, and he wasn't eager to see the Bargist version. The closer they got, the more Jesse's hopes sank. Each of the new animals had a good 50 pounds on Shadow, and there were three of them. Still, Shadow raced toward them, obviously determined to meet them as far away from Scarlet as possible. He expected them to start circling each other, like any other big dogs, with added power and healing. But instead, Shadow charged straight at the lead Barguest's front leg. Jesse didn't even see the attack, so much as hear the leg snap. The new Bargist snarled, but Shadow was already attacking another leg. Only then did Jesse realize what Shadow had figured out. The new Barguests were obviously well-trained, but they moved with hesitance, like they weren't quite used to their new speed or strength. Shadow was experienced, and she was taking advantage. As she snapped a third leg on the lead dog, one of the flanking Bargists closed her teeth around Shadow's neck, which would have been a great strike if Shadow's skin hadn't been impenetrable. By the time the second Bargist realized it couldn't rip out Shadow's throat, she had turned, somehow managing to catch and rip out the second Bargist's tongue. Ugh. Apparently those weren't invulnerable. Jesse winced, but he couldn't look away. The second Bargist yelped, pawing at her mouth, and the third approached Shadow more warily. Shadow planted all 4 feet and snarled, a deafening sound. And then the third Bargist completely shocked Jesse by flipping over on its back, showing its belly. Slowly, the two injured Bargists did the same, showing submission to Shadow, who began stalking around them in a circle, snapping her jaws. It was like watching an angry teacher trying to discipline her students in the middle of a hurricane. Finally, Shadow backed up, and two of the three Bargists stood up and followed her. The Bargist who'd led them before was still healing two broken legs, but it rolled onto its stomach and held its head in submission. Jesse choked out a laugh. Shadow had just taken over a pack of Bargists. But there were still two missing. He looked around. The gunfire had ended, and the Los Angeles group within Scarlet's radius were now fighting hand to hand with the members of the Wild Hunt, led by Kirsten and Hane. At first, it had been chaotic, but now they were clearly focused on a single objective, getting the Luparii off their hellhest. 8 of the riders were already down, and 5 of those were clearly dead on the concrete riverbed, with little streams of black-looking blood trickling toward the tiny channel of sluggish water. The remaining 3 witches on the ground had abandoned their guns and were fighting with swords and fists. Jesse saw that a half-dozen of Kirsten's witches were focused on the riderless Hellhest, who seemed disoriented and confused. Several of them were reacting violently, but a few of the witches must have been horse lovers, because Jesse saw a couple of women standing in front of one of the beasts with their hands up, talking in soothing tones. Finally, he spotted the last 2 Bargists. They were creeping around the sides of the channel, headed for Will, who was shouting orders to some of the werewolves prowling the edge of the riverbed. His back was turned to the Bargists.
"Will!"
Jesse yelled, and the werewolf Alpha turned around just in time to see the nearer Bargist leap for his throat. Then there was a flash, an agonized noise from the Bargist, and the creature backed away from Will with its tail tucked between its legs. The other Bargist tried to pounce, but Will extended what looked like a short metal pole, about 2 feet long. A cattle prod? Jesse stared, his mouth open, and Will shot him a grin.
"I've had to get creative over the years,"
he shouted, shocking the first Bargist who'd attacked as it came in for another round. Will backed up until his shoulders hit the side of the bridge support, and he was able to fend off the two Bargists without much trouble. Eventually, the cattle prod would run out of power, though. The other four Bargists streaked down the channel to his aid. Shadow looked completely in her element, confident and sure and in control. Jesse wished Scarlet could see it. He crouched down again to check on her. Her eyes had closed, and he could see her breathing.
Scar?
When she didn't move, he turned on his phone flashlight and gently used his thumb to raise one eyelid.
Shit.
Her eye was bloody. Jesse had actually seen this before. Years earlier, Noah had gotten a concussion doing stunt work and ended up having a subconjunctival hemorrhage, meaning the little blood vessels in his eye had burst. The blood became trapped between the eye's clear cover and the eye itself. Jesse had seen a couple of cops end up with the same thing, once after a boxing match and once after taking a punch from a suspect. But Scarlet hadn't been in the fight, and he was pretty sure she hadn't hit her head. He checked the other eye. That one was clear.
Scarlet?
He bent closer to her.
Scarlet, honey, wake up. Talk to me.
Her lips moved, and he put his ear next to her mouth to hear.
Not sleeping. Trying to hold them.
Jesse looked up. The fight was still raging, although nearly all the Wild Hunt riders had been pulled off the Hellhest.
That was something, anyway.
But Scarlet was scaring him. Jesse reached into her pants pocket and took out her phone, a new one she'd collected at Dashiell's mansion. He was relieved to find that Abby had found the time to transfer all her contacts. He scrolled through and found Sashi's phone number. It took a few rings for a sleepy voice to come on the line.
Scarlet?
Then,
what's happening? It's so loud.
It's Jesse Cruz,
he shouted, plugging his other ear.
Something's happening to Scarlet.
As quickly as he could, he described the Wild Hunt and the burst blood vessels in Scarlet's eye.
She's hypertensive, Sashi said immediately. Her blood pressure's rising. Tell her she needs to calm down and relax.
Jesse rolled his eyes.
She can't do that. If the riders turn spectral, they can't be killed.
I don't know what to tell you.
Sashi sounded upset.
She's too stressed. If she keeps it up, she'll lose the baby. And she could die.
Shit. Call you back.
Jesse hung up the phone and looked around for Shadow. If he couldn't get Scarlet to stop pushing, Jesse would have to find a way to reduce the pressure. Several of the lanterns had gotten kicked over, and he couldn't find her in the chaos. He brought two fingers to his lips and whistled hard.
Shadow!
He hollered. Maybe 10 seconds went by before she appeared at his side, with a line of panting Bargists behind her like a dog sled team from hell. She'd converted all five.
Scarlet's in trouble,
he told her.
I have to help with the fight, okay? Can you watch her?
Shadow turned her head around, some sort of unspoken communication passing between her and the other Bargists. Instantly, they all hurried to form a circle around Scarlet, facing outward. There was some part of Jesse that longed to take a picture to show her later. Instead, he got to his feet and ran down the channel, pulling out his Glock. From what he could see as he waded into the chaos, the Los Angeles side appeared to be winning, but very slowly. Three Luparii witches, including Petra fucking Corbett, had come to Aldrich's side and were fighting Dashiell, who... Holy shit! Dashiell could fight? He was currently human, but he whirled and spun around the Luparii's sword strikes, knocking Petra down with an open-handed punch to the throat, kicking another calmly in the knee. The third, male witch, was hanging back, looking for an opening so he could catch Dashiell off guard, and Jesse recognized the guy who had first shot Scarlet. He raised his own Glock and fired a round at the man's head. The Luparii member crumpled to the concrete channel, and Dashiell looked up, surprised. He nodded his thank you and turned back to Petra, deflecting an overhead strike with some sort of flashing blade. He wasn't using a gun. He'd been paranoid about hitting his own people in the fray. Dashiell didn't exactly spend a lot of time at the range in human form. But Jesse did. He looked for other openings in the chaos and realized that all the witches still on their hellhest were easy marks. No chance of accidentally hitting the L.A. people. He put down three of them before one of the Luparii members figured out who was shooting and came for Jesse. Jesse started to line up the Glock, but he hadn't heard the Luparii witch coming up behind him. She kicked the weapon out of his hand with her thick work boot and danced away, her hands up like a boxer. Jesse started to reach for the Beretta in his other holster, but she darted in first, landing a quick jab to his solar plexus before he could move away. Even as a human, she was fast as hell. She ducked his next swing, aimed at her head, and danced sideways. He got his elbow up to block her next punch, but it had been a trick. She'd wanted to get close enough to grab the Beretta out of his holster. Jesse fumbled to take it back, but she was quicker, and her movement had put her between him and Scarlet. With a gun. The woman smiled viciously and lifted the handgun, pointing it at his head. Jesse braced himself. And then the most bewildered look came over the witch's face. She dropped the gun and sort of half-heartedly tried to reach over one shoulder. Instead, she flinched again and dropped to her knees, finally falling forward. Only then did Jesse see the three throwing knives sticking out of her back, and just beyond, Scarlet, standing and swaying in the middle of a circle of barghests. Blood was trickling out of her nose. She gave him a woozy smile and crumpled. Chapter 46. Despite the pressure in my radius, I managed to struggle to my feet long enough to stop Jesse from being shot by a mean-looking female Luparii. I made a mental note to tease him about letting someone steal his gun. Then I was falling back down, and I figured I probably wouldn't remember it. I managed to sort of catch myself on my hands and knees rather than faceplant. I was dimly aware that there were other barghests near me, but they weren't even looking at me, and I figured if Shadow was cool, I was cool. At some point, my undershirt must have torn, because the Kevlar vest felt itchy and constraining. I wanted so badly to unstrap it that it was probably good I needed my hands to support myself. I lowered my butt to the ground. I looked around as best I could, with a huge part of my mind focused on my radius. The fight was starting to wind down, but it wasn't over. The Luparii witches on their hellhest kept coming to Aldrich's defense, and any number of our people had fallen near his hellhest's feet and been dragged to safety by the others. Two of the vampires were running around with honest-to-goodness squirt guns, trying to shoot tranquilizers into the hellhest's mouths. The squirt guns had been Jesse's idea, and it seemed to be working. Four hellhest were down, and I could see one actually swaying. One of the Luparii witches must have tried to run, because there were three naked people trading punches with Luparii witches on the ground. I figured the werewolves had leapt at the riders trying to escape my radius, turning human as they did. I hadn't even felt the change. It had probably been awesome looking. I noticed with grim satisfaction that Petra Corbett was lying on the ground, unmoving. I couldn't tell from a distance, but I was pretty sure she was dead. I didn't even care how it had happened. Dashiell, meanwhile, had stopped fighting Aldrich long enough to help Hain, who was holding on to the reins of one of the Hellhest as it gnashed its teeth at Kirsten. The creature finally settled down, and Dashiell immediately turned back toward Aldrich, who was snarling and kicking at his hellhest, trying to head under the bridge and escape in the other direction. I watched Will step into his path, and then... Scarlet! Jesse had dropped down by my side, his guns back in their holsters. Why did he sound so worried? You're bleeding, sweetheart. I looked down at myself, confused. I hadn't been shot. Well, not anywhere the vest didn't protect me. Then a couple of bright red drops hit my shirt, and I realized they came from my nose. I called Sashi. She said it's high blood pressure.
If you don't calm down, you could lose the baby, he said. I felt the pressure on my radius ease up some more, but I wasn't sure how much longer I could hold it anyway. That was too much to say out loud at the moment, though, so I held up a finger to Jesse and took stock of my radius. The Barghests and Hellhest were still buzzing at me, but only 4 of the Furious Host remained. I zeroed in on Aldrich. Will had done something to cause Aldrich's Hellhest to rear up, and I watched Aldrich slide off the Hellhest's back, landing on his feet with a nimbleness that seemed strange for a man his age. Then he pulled and brandished the sword, Durandal, and I suspected it was helping him somehow, or maybe protecting him. No, not the sword. There was something else on Aldrich's person, the thing I'd sensed earlier. The scroll. I looked at Jesse, who bent closer to me. Aldrich has the scroll on him, I whispered. It didn't short out, but I think I could destroy it. He nodded and stood up, running toward Aldrich. I looked at Shadow. Help him? She looked from me to the other Barghests surrounding me, and I could see her decide she needed to stay and keep them in line, just in case their loyalty to her wasn't absolute. Shit. Jesse pulled one of his guns and aimed it at Aldrich, but the shot hit him in the back of the Kevlar. Aldrich snarled and swung around to face Jesse, which left Will an opening to jump on his back, choking him. Aldrich roared and swung the sword up, but I could practically see him decide not to swing it. He would risk burying the magic blade in his own shoulder. While he was distracted, Jesse tried to shoot him in the head, and when Aldrich ducked the blow, Jesse shot him in the leg instead. It collapsed, causing the Luparii leader to go down in a tumble, with Will still clinging to his back. Jesse had been smart enough to stop a good 15 feet from them, where Aldrich couldn't swing the sword, but that meant he couldn't get in another shot without possibly hitting Will. I stood up and staggered closer to them, pulling a knife out of my belt. Even on the ground, Aldrich would not let go of the sword. He rolled sideways and swung it at Will, who instinctively put up his left hand to protect his head, and the blade sliced clean through his forearm, just below the elbow. Will's hand dropped with a meaty sound. He cried out in pain and fell back on his butt, cradling the stump. No! I bellowed. Suddenly, the pressure of keeping everyone in my radius seemed to lift as my range exploded outward with my emotions. Kirsten's humans-go-away spells began popping all around us, and a bunch of werewolves turned human again. I didn't even notice. I was trying to crawl toward Will. Jesse turned to look at me when I yelled, and behind him I saw Aldrich's face light up with an idea. He might be losing this battle, but he could at least take out Will, and possibly run away in the chaos. You will not! I screamed. And without any thought at all, I raised my right arm and pointed the flat palm at Aldrich. I was already really in tune with my radius, and I immediately felt the buzz of his magic. Not just the Luparii witch powers, but the concentrated magic of the Furious Host that was currently possessing him. Fairy magic, quite possibly. I studied that magic for one heartbeat because it was big and scary and nothing I'd ever played with before. And then I pulled on it. I called it toward me. This was more or less what I'd done each of the times I'd cured someone of being a vampire or werewolf. Usually I called it into me and then let it dissolve away, like sand through my fingers. But this time the magic was too strong, too big. I wrestled with it for a moment, trying to let go of it, but it was like letting go of something you'd accidentally superglued to your hands. I couldn't stop feeling, tasting the Wild Hunt magic, and it was twisted and wrong, an intricate structure built on the corpses of sacrifices. But I couldn't let go. My body started to shake, and I vomited green-tasting something. Then there was a tearing, and everything went still.
The last thing I saw was Jesse standing over me, holding two pieces of torn parchment paper. Chapter 47.
Shh, I think she's waking up.
Scarlet? Sweetheart? I felt feverish, but a cool hand smoothed sticky hair off my forehead. I caught a smell of Armani cologne and oranges and felt myself smiling. Jesse. My eyes opened, and I processed the most immediate and obvious new information. Hospital room. I was in a fairly plush private room, someone had obviously pulled strings, with Jesse in a chair on one side of the bed, holding my right hand. There was an IV in the other one. Sashi stood on the left side. She looked exhausted, her hair mussed, her clothes wrinkled. The first time I'd cured someone of magic, I'd lost my powers for a few weeks, but to my surprise, I could feel Sashi in my radius. Holy shit. I was getting stronger. Although, it really didn't feel like it at the moment.
Hello again? Sashi said when she saw me looking.
You came back, I croaked in a voice that had obviously not been used for a while. She smiled.
I never left. When Jesse called the night of the fight, I was at a hotel in Burbank, crying my eyes out. Didn't want to fly home like that.
It started coming back to me. I'd sent Will out to talk to Sashi.
Will.
I tried to sit up, but I didn't do more than lift my head an inch, and even that was exhausting.
Will?
I asked instead. A peculiar look crossed her face.
He's alive, she said.
I looked at Jesse. The baby?
Also alive,
he assured me, and I breathed out a sigh, my numb body somehow filling with relief.
You had a seizure in the riverbed. And by the time we got you to a hospital, you had a pretty serious fever. The doctors were worried,
Jesse added.
But they've been giving you fluids around the clock.
My eyes drifted to the IV in my left arm.
They did an ultrasound about 2 hours ago, and the heartbeat was going strong,
Sashi put in. You guys heard the heartbeat? Jesse grinned.
It was amazing. Fast, like a tiny locomotive.
I smiled. Then their words caught up with me. Sashi had said, the night of the fight. That was late Sunday night.
What day is it?
Tuesday afternoon,
Jesse said.
It's... well, there's a lot to catch you up on.
Sashi checked her watch.
I should get back to Will's room.
He's here? In the hospital? My brow furrowed. Werewolves didn't go to the hospital. They didn't need to, for one thing, and for another, they'd be identified as medical anomalies.
Why?
She glanced at Jesse.
Scar,
he said gently.
When Aldrich was going to kill Will, you took his magic.
Yeah.
I sort of remembered that part.
Will was kneeling just behind him. You took his magic, too.
I blinked at him for a long moment.
What?
My first thought was that curing Will would prevent him from ever being able to grow his arm back, and that was on me. Tears pricked my eyes.
I'm so sorry, I wailed. I didn't mean to.
It's okay,
Sashi soothed.
Scarlet, he's human now.
I stared at her, uncomprehending, and then I finally understood. Werewolves can't heal injuries sustained before they become werewolves, so there would be no going back for Will. Even if he went through the change again, he would only have 3 legs, and that would make him too slow and weak to be alpha. There was no reason not to stay human.
You guys, you're going to be together?
I asked Sashi.
We're going to try.
She smiled at me with tears in her eyes.
Thank you. Stopping Uldric saved his life.
I just stared at her, open-mouthed, as she kissed my cheek and laughed. Then I tried to focus on Jesse, although I was already getting drowsy again.
Hi,
I said. He smiled, bent down, and kissed my lips.
Hi.
How's your brother?
He's going to be okay, Jesse said. Molly stayed at the hospital that night and pressed Noah when he woke up. He was discharged this morning.
That's good,
I said, my eyelids getting heavy.
I think I'm supposed to sleep more.
He kissed me again, this time on my forehead.
Rest.
The next time I woke up, it was dark outside, and Jesse was sleeping hunched in a chair. His head was practically at a 90-degree angle. I slid sideways in the nice hospital bed.
Jesse,
I said softly. He woke up with a start. What's wrong?
Nothing. I'm fine.
You should go home and get some sleep. He shook his head, as I'd expected.
I'm staying.
Then come in the bed.
Jesse hesitated for a minute, then got up and walked around the bed so he could climb in on my right side, where there was no IV. It was an odd recreation of when we'd shared my bed after his attack, only a few days earlier. We spent a few seconds awkwardly trying to find positions that would fit together, and I fell back to sleep with Jesse holding my hand. The next morning, I woke up feeling stronger, almost back to myself, or at least the pregnancy version of myself. After the nurse's rounds and my breakfast, I pushed away the tray and said to Jesse, "Have you been getting updates?" He nodded.
"Hain or Sashi call every couple of hours."
"Okay. Fill me in." So he did. Well, I kept falling asleep, but every time I woke up, he picked up where we'd left off. The Los Angeles Old World had lost 12 people, 6 witches, 2 werewolves, and 4 vampires. Of the dead, Jesse only knew the 2 werewolves, Travis Holcrest, who had required my cleaning services a couple of times, and Rosarita Hernandez, whom he'd interviewed briefly during the first Lupari case. I felt a surprisingly sharp pang of sorrow for Travis, who had been a little dim and silly, but a really nice guy overall. There had been lots of injuries, but most of them had healed after I shorted myself out. The remaining ones were handled by Matthias, and later, when Will was out of the woods, Sashi. Aldrich had survived the night, only to find all his minions dead and his magic gone. All of it. Permanently. He was now susceptible to vampire press, so Dashiell had been extracting all kinds of juicy information from him for days, more than enough to squash any remaining Lupari operations in Europe. Apparently this was quite upsetting for Aldrich, because he had tried to hang himself in one of the cells in Dashiell's basement. They'd stopped him in time and pressed his mind so he wouldn't try again. Dashiell was working on a way to execute him that would send a message to anyone back in Europe, who might still be toying with the world domination plan. A nicer, more humane Scarlet would probably have felt sorry for the old man, or tried to talk them out of killing him in cold blood, but I just couldn't find it in me to care when or how Aldrich died. "Did Aldrich say anything about why they waited 3 years to come back here?" I asked Jesse. He nodded.
"Because of the animals,"
he reported.
"They needed time to train new dogs, specifically to go after Shadow, and the horses, too."
He shook his head a little.
"But they couldn't do the spell until they got the scroll, so the animals weren't really used to their new forms. That probably saved us during the fight."
"Speaking of the scroll, how's Owen doing?" I asked. Jesse told me he was back at school, trying to get his human life on track again. I wondered if it would take, or if he would find himself sucked back into the world of witchcraft. I had a feeling Kirsten would keep a close eye on him.
Meanwhile, he was also helping a couple of his aunts organize a funeral for Carl, whose murder would probably go unsolved. I hoped that Jesse and I would be able to go to the service. Whatever family he'd been born into, Carl Schmidt had saved a lot of people by keeping that spell away from the rest of the Luparii. As for the Wild Hunt magic itself, it had been completely destroyed, thanks to Jesse. He'd ripped the scroll containing the spell in half while it was in my radius, which had released the pent-up magic. The sword had short-circuited at the same time I'd cured Aldrich. It now appeared to be just a regular sword, without the creepy glowing. Kirsten and her witches were studying both objects to try to figure out how they'd managed to contain such power. "What will happen to the animals?" I asked, worried about Shadow. I already missed her. Again. He grinned at me. "Remember the end of 101 Dalmatians?" "Oh, no. We are not starting a Dalmatian plantation." Jesse laughed and said, "No, but it kind of feels that way." All six Barghests were currently staying at the cottage, overseen by Molly and Astrid, of all people. "Wait, a werewolf? Aren't they trying to kill her?" "That's the funny thing," Jesse said. "When I ripped the spell, all the animals lost their, well, their urge for evil, I guess. Physically, they look the same, but the Barghests aren't driven to kill the wolves, and the Hellhest aren't trying to hurt anyone either. They're basically just smart, bulletproof horses now. It's just like when Shadow is in your radius. All the permanent physical changes stay, including the intelligence. I'm guessing they won't heal fast anymore, but none of us are willing to experiment on them."
"Good call. What's going to happen to them?"
"Well, Dashiell wanted to try to kill at least the Hellhest, but Kirsten convinced him that they could be a show of power to our enemies. He's probably going to buy a ranch in the mountains and hire a couple of the witches to stay there and take care of them." I noticed that he'd said "our enemies" instead of "their enemies" or "your enemies."
"That sounds like the best sitcom ever," I commented. "What are we going to do with the new Barghests?"
"Believe it or not, Astrid thinks Eli should let the werewolves adopt them. Regular pets are scared of the werewolves, but the Barghests aren't affected, and they're powerful enough to run with the wolves on full moon nights. If they can be sort of incorporated into the pack, it will increase LA's power base, too. But the others are still discussing it."
He held out his hands, palms up.
"It's a work in progress."
"That was good and all, but... Eli?"
Jesse's face sobered. "He's the new alpha."
"Oh. It made sense, of course. Will had been effectively forced into retirement."
"Scratch that. I had effectively forced Will into retirement.
But having my ex-boyfriend back in my life as someone I regularly had to work with? That's awkward."
I watched Jesse carefully for signs of jealousy, but he shrugged, tucking my hair behind my ear. "We'll deal with it."
That night, I had a very welcome visitor. "Wyatt!" I cried out as the cowboy vampire hovered in my doorway, hat in hand. He looked good, pale and drawn and leaning hard on a cane, but good. I waved him in. "Your leg," I said as he limped his way in. "It came back?"
"Yes, ma'am."
Jesse gave Wyatt his chair, and the vampire nodded gratefully.
"And it's an experience I cannot recommend less."
He regarded me in the hospital bed for a moment.
"I leave you alone for one day, and you end up in the hospital?"
I waved it off. "I'm okay, really. Mostly they're just keeping me here to..." I trailed off, then shrugged to myself. What the hell? I trusted Wyatt. "To keep an eye on the baby," I finished. Wyatt's enormous mustache spread into a smile.
"The... Miss Scarlet, you're expecting a child?"
"Well, it better not be a dinosaur," I replied.
"I don't know, I think a triceratops would be pretty cool."
Jesse commented. For a second, Wyatt looked like he might cry.
That's just wonderful. Congratulations to you both.
Jesse and I exchanged a look. We had already dealt with this from a dozen different doctors and nurses, and I, for one, was tired of it.
Thank you, I said simply.
I hesitated for a second, then forced the words out. Are you angry with me? About Katya?
That she saved my life?
He gave me a gentle smile.
I was, a bit. I still want to be with my Ellen. But,
he gave a little shrug,
I swore to Mr. Dashiell that I would look out for you for a year. I reckon I need to stick around for it.
Wait.
I'd known that Wyatt had sworn loyalty to Dashiell, of course. Every vampire in the city had to do that. He asked you to look out for me? Wyatt's smile widened.
I volunteered. He agreed that you seemed to need some extra help.
He glanced wryly at the cane.
Or maybe just a straw man. I can work with that.
Jesse squeezed my hand. I didn't know what to say. Wyatt started to shift his weight to leave, then gave a little start.
Oh, I almost forgot.
He leaned his cane against the bed so he could reach into his jacket pocket.
This is for you.
He handed me a set of keys. I looked at him in confusion.
Dashiell, Kirsten, and Will all went in on it together,
Wyatt explained.
It's a Mercedes Metris cargo van.
His eyes twinkled.
Now I know why they were so obsessed with getting all the safety features.
I looked down at the keys and back up at Wyatt.
It's all paid off,
Wyatt added.
They wanted you to know how grateful they are. And I imagine it's something of a baby gift, too.
I looked up at Jesse with tears in my eyes. He smiled and kissed the top of my head.
Thank you, I said to Wyatt.
The following morning, I went through a whole series of tests on me and the baby, and eventually the doctors pronounced me well enough to go home. The ones not on Dashiell's payroll were mystified, but they eventually decided that I'd caught some sort of weird flu bug that had caused high blood pressure and a seizure. I was too busy being grateful that the baby and I were healthy to care what they called it. The next morning, Thursday, I was discharged. Jesse, who hadn't left my side except to shower and fetch clean clothes, got to wheel me out of the hospital.
Don't get used to this babying me thing, I warned him.
Yes, Miss Scarlet,
he sang. I made a mental note to punch him when he wasn't pushing my wheelchair. Epilogue. December 25th, 8 months later.
Elizabeth,
I suggested, tossing a kernel of popcorn. Jesse caught it in his mouth because he was better at this game than I was. He had an unfair mobility advantage.
Too Victorian. How about Posy?
He threw a kernel of popcorn toward my mouth, which I completely missed. I made a face.
How many times do I have to tell you we are not going to be those L.A. people who give their kid a weirdo name just to be different?
We were sitting in my living room at the cottage, on opposite ends of the sofa, attempting to catch red and green-dyed popcorn in our mouths. Jesse's Christmas playlist was on the stereo, and he'd put up a little tree that glowed in the corner. I hadn't helped, because I was so huge by then that I felt like Jabba the Hutt. It was seriously affecting my popcorn-catching game. There would have been kernels covering my lap, if not for the helpful Barghest making sure we kept the floors clean.
So that's a no on Khaleesi?
Jesse teased. I grabbed a whole handful of popcorn and chucked it at his face, which was stupid because he caught most of it in his mouth and managed to give me a smug grin while he was chewing. Shadow happily snapped up the popcorn that had fallen on the floor. Half the time, it didn't even touch the ground before she got it. Jesse was trying to keep me distracted, I knew.
I'd tried to call Jack the day before to wish him and the kids a Merry Christmas, and my brother had let the call go to voicemail. In the last 8 months, we'd had one phone conversation, in which he told me that he'd be happy to welcome me back into his life whenever I quit working for Dashiell. Jack had quit his position with the Cardinal Vampire a few days after he'd learned about Dashiell's criminal activity. Jesse had tried to convince me to tell Jack about the baby, but I'd kept it to myself. I didn't want my brother to compromise his valid principles because I'd extorted him with guilt. But I missed him and Juliet and my niece and nephew. I'd thought about sending gifts, but it seemed manipulative. Jesse and I had exchanged Christmas gifts the night before. I was tired all the time now, so mine was lame. An enormous tin of popcorn and a book. But Jesse had surprised me with a thick manila file. He had hired a private detective in New York to investigate Jameson's background. His mother had died 3 years earlier, it turned out, and afterward his father had moved down to Jamaica to help a distant cousin with a boat business. The file did include a phone number for Jameson's older sister, Diana, who I planned to call in a few days, once the holidays were over. I just wasn't sure yet what I would say. The private detective had also managed to dig up several photographs of Jameson, which was a small miracle considering he'd worked for a security-conscious vampire. Jesse had framed the nicest one, and I'd already set it out in the baby's room. I was deeply touched by his gesture, especially since he had every right to be jealous.
"What about your mom's name?" Jesse suggested. "Sarah."
"I like it, but it seems a little rough to name her after two, you know,
dead people,"
I said ruefully. I had already decided that the baby's middle name would be Jamie, to honor her father. If I thought it wouldn't make me want to cry every time I shouted at my kid, I would have made it her first name. But I wasn't strong enough for that.
"You'll figure it out," Jesse assured me. "You've got another week and a half yet. Molly will be back tonight, right? You know she'll want to add her 2 cents.
Molly was visiting her friends in San Francisco again, bringing them some Christmas presents. I'd been seeing less of her the last month, since she'd been busy buying furniture and decorating her new place. The little guest cottage wasn't big enough for 3 adults, a bar guest, and a baby, and before I could even raise the subject, Molly had insisted on moving out. I'd protested. I wasn't ready to be far away from her, especially when I was feeling fat and useless. But Molly had a surprise for me, too. She had contacted the vampire who owned the mansion adjoining the guest cottage and arranged to buy it. Vampires are stupid rich. Anyway, she was going to be living just a few dozen feet away, and she had insisted on setting up a nursery in the big house, too, so she could babysit when I had to go out on jobs. In true Molly style, her nursery was ostentatious as hell. I put a handful of popcorn in my own mouth and took the bat phone out of the pocket of my hoodie, which was actually one of Jesse's that I'd taken to wearing around the house like a bathrobe. I checked the screen, but there was nothing to see. Jesse was watching me.
"Tonight is the thing, isn't it?"
"Yeah, I kind of wanted to be there, but they didn't invite me." I tried to put the phone back in the hoodie pocket, but it fumbled and fell on the floor under the coffee table. I sighed, leaving it there for now. Reaching for it would make me fall off the couch, and I'd already done that many times. This was exactly why Jabba the Hutt had so many servants around. Jesse didn't pick it up either, having learned the hard way not to run around fixing things for me. "I guess I keep waiting for someone to change their mind and call me," I admitted.
"I get that. You spent a long time making it happen."
I shrugged. I owed her a favor. Then I had to put a hand on my huge belly.
"Oof!" "Kicking?"
"Yeah. Watch." I moved my hand, and we both stared at my shirt as it visibly moved.
"I'll never get used to that," Jesse marveled. "It's so
gross."
He laughed. It's not gross.
You want to feel? He scooted closer and rested his flat palm on my huge stomach. Of course, the baby chose that moment to stop kicking. Jesse started to pull back, but I grabbed his hand and held it in place.
Just wait, I told him. She loves high fives.
We waited for a minute, two, and then the baby kicked or pushed with her hand or whatever, and Jesse's face crinkled with delight. Then he went quiet, looking at me for a long moment.
What? I asked. You know what we haven't really talked about?
Jesse said, in a tone that was almost studiously casual. Why you think it'd be okay to name a child Posey?
What's my role in the baby's life?
He asked, his eyes meeting mine. It was true, we hadn't actually discussed it. It had gotten downright awkward during Christmas Eve dinner at Jesse's parents' house the night before. He had told them the baby wasn't his, it would be pretty obvious when she came out looking part black, and that we'd gotten together for real after I was already pregnant. But his folks and brother had still looked at me with confusion. I didn't really care what they thought, though. Jesse was the one who mattered. He had come to every doctor's appointment and birthing class with me. He'd painted the nursery and put together the car seat. He'd driven halfway across the city to buy me the one sandwich that sounded good to eat and had made any number of late-night trips to the pharmacy for antacids when I had heartburn. And he loved me. In many ways, the last 8 months had been the best of my life, and Jesse was a huge part of that, not just as my boyfriend or lover, but as a partner in this bizarre endeavor. Well, I said finally, I don't want to erase Jameson. Whatever I know about him, I'll tell the baby, and it'd be nice if she can have some kind of relationship with this Diana. I blew out a breath and gathered my courage. So, yeah, Jameson is always going to be her father. But I was kind of hoping you would be her daddy. Jesse's face broke out into a smile of pure joy, and I felt my eyes fill with unexpected tears, something that was happening a lot these days. I can't give you your own biological child, you know, I reminded him. His hand was still on my stomach, and I covered it with mine. This is it for me. He looked into my eyes and said softly, This is it for me, too. On the floor in front of the couch, the bat phone began buzzing. I tried to lean forward to pick it up, but, Jabba the Hutt style, I couldn't reach. Jesse laughed and grabbed the phone and glanced at the screen.
It's Kirsten, he said, holding the phone to his ear. This is Jesse.
He had taken over my cleanup work for the past 3 weeks, since I'd gotten too huge to do it myself. If the job was really bad, I would come along just to provide magic cancellation, but most of them had been easy for an ex-cop to handle. I called him my unpaid intern. Corey was also home for the holidays if we needed extra assistance, but her I would pay. Jesse listened for a second, rolled his eyes, and nodded.
I'm on my way,
he told Kirsten and hung up the phone. Bad? I asked. You need me to come?
Nah, just some witches who messed up a love spell again.
Help me out before you go, I commanded. I gotta pee again. I could stand up by myself, really, but it would take a pathetically long time. Jesse stood and reached both hands down, bracing himself to pull me up. I couldn't really blame him for that one. I stood up and at the same time felt something inside me loosen. Oh, shit. Had I finally peed my pants? I looked down. Jesse? I think you better call Corey to go on that job.
Why?
My water just broke. 24 miles away, at a mansion in Pasadena, Dashiell was straightening a portrait on the wall that had not, in fact, been crooked.
I don't know when I last saw you this nervous, Beatrice said behind him.
She sounded amused and a little worried. They had sent all the staff home for the night on full pay, claiming it was a Christmas gift. Generally, they kept at least a few security guards, even on holidays, but Dashiell doubted they'd have any difficulty with attacks from outside the mansion. And if they came under attack from inside the mansion, well, no security guard in the world would help. When the doorbell rang, Beatrice started forward, but he rushed past her to answer it himself. The young woman on the doorstep wasn't at all what he'd expected. She was young-looking and beautiful, which was fairly typical, but she had neon green hair and wore a baggy red sweater dress that disguised her figure. Layers and layers of costume jewelry necklaces covered most of her chest.
"Maven?"
he said, not entirely sure. The young woman took off her large spectacles, shoving them into her handbag pocket. She smiled.
"I'm glad we could finally do this."
Dashiell stepped aside.
"Please, come in."
They sat down in the living room, and he introduced her to Beatrice, who offered to call in a refreshment from the guest house in the back, but Maven declined.
"I'd prefer no one knew I was here, at least not yet."
She looked around the mansion.
"You have a beautiful home. Do you sweep it for bugs?"
"Just this afternoon," Dashiell assured her. She nodded and crossed her legs.
"I'll get right to the point, then. After you allowed Scarlet Bernard to fill me in on the Luparii attack last spring, I looked into the Luparii and their activities in Europe. They came very close to creating a new order."
"I know."
He had done his own investigation, in addition to the information from Aldrich. The old witch had put all his bets on the Wild Hunt, allowing his best people to come to L.A. to participate.